This is Brewers on Tap.
Into episode number 14 of Brewers on Tap, the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. Hi again, everybody. Jeff Levering with you. Thanks for everybody who submitted their questions over the last week to our great guests that are coming up over the course of this podcast. Reliever Michael Blazek, as well as head groundskeeper here at Miller Park, Michael Betcher. Make sure those questions keep coming in by tweeting at Brewers using the hashtag Brewers on Tap. As we mentioned, it's a very busy show to get to. We'll hear from a number of people that were at the Selig Experience Gala on Thursday night last week, as well as our featured guests, reliever Michael Blazek and head groundskeeper Michael Betcher. So without further ado, here's This Week in Brewers History.
And now, This Week, the Brewers History.
We go back almost 33 years, June the 2nd, 1982, and that's when the Brewers started a rebound from a slow start to become the American League champions under new manager Harvey Keene. Milwaukee becomes known as Harvey's Wallbangers, as everybody knows, and they went 72-43 after June the 2nd to finish with the best record in baseball at 95-67. So the slow start for the Brewers this year, who knows, maybe Council's Council can get it going and rehash some of the memories of 1982. Well, as we mentioned just a couple of moments ago, and before we get our highlights going for the last week, the Selig Experience opened up at Miller Park last Thursday, a great tribute to Commissioner Emeritus Bud Selig, and as we heard from Rick Schlesinger last week, a phenomenal way to honor the legacy of baseball in Milwaukee. So let's hear from legendary broadcaster Bob Uecker, Brewers principal owner Mark Attanasio, the current commissioner Rob Manfred, Robin Yount, and former Commissioner Selig himself about the Selig Experience.
Everyone here is a part of Bud Selig and what he has accomplished here. A special place in Milwaukee baseball and to all of you for attending. We are privileged and honored to pay tribute to one of our own, a man who not only had an impact on Milwaukee's baseball history, but also that of Major League Baseball players over the last 50 years.
When I think back to that kid who walked the streets of the west side of Milwaukee, graduated from the University of Wisconsin, thought he was coming back to be a history professor, and go through all the things that we went through starting in 1964 when it became apparent that the Braves were going to leave. This is an amazing day, a remarkable day. And let me say, first of all, to Mark and Debbie, to the Brewers, particularly to Rick Schlesinger, who devoted his heart and soul to this project, with great help from Mark and the Brewers, a very, very sincere thank you. Job magnificently done.
So why the Selig Experience? We wanted to tell the unique story of a man, and behind me on the scoreboard, yes, that is Bud Selig in high school. We wanted to tell the story of that man and a city that overcame incredible obstacles and adversity to realize the dream of returning Major League Baseball to Milwaukee, and to share how that dream continues to be realized with the millions of fans who support this team every year.
But as some of you know, I had almost 25 years of my own little Selig experience. Some of it was not all that fun at the time, but I have realized in my first 4 months how many things he taught me that were indispensable to the job that I'm doing my very best to do well. And I also have a renewed appreciation for how difficult it was for him to accomplish all of the great things that he accomplished as Commissioner of Baseball.
My friend Bart Giamatti used to say to me, "Buddy, baseball is a metaphor for life. You'll learn a lot. It'll have its ups and it'll have its downs. It'll have its successes, and it'll have its failures. But when you think what a wonderful role it's played in society, when you watch this film and you watch people having such a good time, it made this community better, as it does in all communities. Yes, of course, it has its problems. That's why he said baseball is a metaphor for life, because that's exactly what it is. But we work hard to solve our problems, and have. And so when I look back on all this, I say to you all, boy, have I been lucky. Wow. Who could believe that a kid growing up would not only realize his dream, but realize his dream in this incredible fashion? And so, in closing, I guess this will come out like it did in the last speech I gave, Rob will remember this, in New York. Wonderful honor there, the last night that I was commissioner. And I'd been thinking about my life as I did the last week or so. I closed my speech, and then I said off the top of my head, as I will say to you here tonight, well, what you've seen here is a little boy's dreams that came true. Thank you.
I was one of the lucky ones that got to go through with Bud and his family. And now Rob Manfred, the acting commissioner, so the last and the present day, and Joe Torre was part of that group. Like I say, a whole bunch of the family and of the Seeligs, and I can honestly tell you, there weren't a whole lot of dry eyes in there, me included, and my wife. And it was, I didn't know what to expect, really, to be honest with you. I didn't know what they were going to do for them. And it was so cool, I can't even begin to tell you. I mean, everybody make sure when you come to the ballpark that you make a trip through it. And it's not over the top, it's small, but it just kind of tells the story of what he did for not just the Brewers, but the whole state of Wisconsin. Because I really believe that, you know, there's a awful good chance if it wasn't for Bud Selig, the Brewers, they may not exist today. I might be wrong, but, you know, he certainly was the man that made sure that they're here. I got summoned to that office many times. I saw the chair that I had to sit in numerous times. It was like the kid getting sent to the principal's office. And it kind of felt like that in my early days, like when I was, you know, Mr. Selig would like to see you in his office right away. And so, yeah, I sat in that chair right across from him, and I know every piece of furniture in that place. He was more than just the owner, for not just me, but most of the guys. You know, I think he genuinely cared about the well-being of his players. I mean, it's a silly cliche to say we're all family and this and that, but I mean, I think he really did care about the people that worked for him, and if there was an issue, if he was there to help, he would do that. And not just for, but I think a lot of guys felt that way that got to know him. You know, I know a lot of guys that were here for a while that, you know, still have stayed friends with him, and vice versa.
On a personal note, after I went through the Selig experience last week on Thursday, I felt like I had been here for years, let alone just a couple of months. If you're here at Miller Park watching the Brewers, do yourself a favor and get inside the Selig experience. And now let's take a listen to the last week's highlights.
Ball and two strikes. Gomez rips one deep left center, and she's gone! A leadoff home run for Carlos Gomez. Tied at one with a bang. And Lynn, that ball's hit. Way back it goes, and it's gone! A home run for Lynn. Two-run shot. All time. tied at three and right on cue. Two pitch is fouled and Maldonado catches it. Yeah. And that's an out.
Because it hit the glove first.
How about that?
If it hits the catcher's mitt, caroms off the glove and you catch it in the air, it's an out. Now, if it hits the catching equipment or the mask, it doesn't count as an out.
So it works just like a foul tip swinging strike. Great play by Maldonado.
Yep. Boy, look at those quick reflexes. Able to find that ball quickly. He had to and able to hold on to it.
That is one you rarely see. And here is Maldonado. Maldonado should see something he can hit. Maldonado, center field. Did he get this one?
Way back. Get up. Get out of here. Gone for Maldonado. He just hit a walk-off out of here. And this one is over. And the Brewers in 17 innings. How about Martin Maldonado? He caught them all here today. He was in harness for all of it. He has his third hit in the game. Correction, his fourth. A pair of doubles, a single, and now a walk-off home run to win this one for the Crew. The final. Wow.
Winning run at first. The 1-0 to Wong and a swing and a chopper. First base. Rogers coming in. He's got it. And he sprawls to the bag for the out. And the Brewers win. They shut out St. Louis 1-0.
Made that one look easy, didn't he?
Wow. You got to mark that one down as one of the best wins of the year. The Brewers in a dandy tonight after a 17-inning win yesterday. They win it 1-0 here tonight as K-Rod gets Wong.
Adam Lind had a tough month of May at the plate, but he had a big night against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Carlos Gomez hit his ninth career leadoff home run Friday night as well against Arizona. You had the memorable 17-inning walk-off heroics from Martin Maldonado, capping the longest game in Miller Park history. And the Brewers got their 10-day, 9-game road trip off to a good start with Francisco Rodriguez capping a 1-0 victory over the Cardinals in St. Louis on Monday night. Let's get to our first guest here on the podcast, reliever Michael Blazek. He's been one of the best out of the bullpen for the Brewers this season, but not only is he making a splash here in the Brewers bullpen, the national media is starting to take hold of the right-hander out of Las Vegas.
Let's catch up with the Crew.
Now it's time to catch up with the Crew this week on Brewers on Tap, and now we chat with reliever Michael Blazek. And Mike, it's been a fantastic season for you so far. You've been throwing the ball really well, and over the course of your career, you've been a starter, you've been a reliever. Now you're pretty much just a strictly a reliever guy and filling in a lot of different roles. How's it feel for you, obviously, to be in the major leagues and to be very successful, but the relief role for you right now is one that you've really kind of taken a hold of? What's going on this year?
I just changed my mindset from last year to this year. Coming out of the bullpen, you have to have a little bit different mindset when you come into games. You have to come to the ballpark ready to go every day. So, I try to take it one step at a time, execute one pitch at a time each time I go out there. It's been good so far. I'm trying to stay healthy, trying to come to the ballpark ready to go every single day. You never know when you're going to pitch, as a reliever. But whenever the situation calls for it, I'd like to go in there and do my job.
Well, it's tough for you as well. Like you said, you don't know when you're going to pitch, and you don't know whether you're going to go two innings or four innings or if you're just going to need to get one guy. What does that do for you mentally? And, in the first or second inning, do you think, hey, man, I just got to get ready to go?
Yeah, you kind of just see how the game's going. You stay loose down there because you never know. It could be the first or second inning and something bad happens out there. So you're always prepared for something to happen. But, throughout the whole game, regardless of the score or the situation, I always try to put myself in a mental state to where I'm ready to come to the game.
Over the course of your career, as we mentioned, you've been a starter, you've been a reliever, and sometimes both in the same season. It's never an easy thing to do, whether you're transitioning from being a starter to a reliever, which might be a little bit easier. You know, going from a reliever to being a starter, then you just got to build up your workload. You know, for you, you've had a lot of success in a relief capacity. Is there at some point that you want to get back into the rotation?
I mean, you know, possibly. You know, right now, I try not to really think about it too much, just because, you know, I kind of take away from what I'm trying to do down there in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at some point, maybe, you know, I want to get back in the rotation. But, you know, having success right now doing what I'm doing, so I really don't want to change it too much.
I wouldn't fix anything right now. If it were me, you did fix one thing in the offseason, though. We talked about this in spring training. You made just one little mechanical switch before the beginning of this season. What was it, and what made you come up with the change?
Well, it was in spring training. We were throwing some bullpens, and I think it was like the second or third one. You know, Loesch and Garza and the starters were standing behind me, and, you know, they noticed a couple things, and the biggest one was just keeping my head still and keeping my eyes on the target where I was trying to throw it. You know, I had a lot of moving parts in my mechanics, my motion. So, you know, they just tried to simplify it for me and just said, keep your head as still as you can and look at where you're throwing instead of, you know, looking down and then looking up and then throwing the ball. You know, and it could be nothing really, but, you know, as long as I tell myself to keep my head still, I feel like my mechanics, my motion, my windup, everything's a lot smoother, and, you know, I'm able to throw the ball a little bit more consistently where I want it to go.
And the nice thing for you coming out of the bullpen, you throw everything. You got your fastball that moves a little bit, the four-seamer, the two-seamer, your curveball, your slider, your changeup. You know, there are a lot of guys that come out of the bullpen that only throw two pitches, fastball and some sort of, you know, curveball or slider. And you got all four. That's a huge advantage for you.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big thing that I did when I went into the bullpen a few years ago, you know, was to keep all of my stuff. You know, I didn't want to eliminate one or two pitches and be a one or two pitch guy when I came out of the bullpen. You know, mostly just in case I did go back into the starting rotation, I still had those pitches. But, you know, being able to throw four pitches, five pitches at times for strikes, it was, you know, it gives me the advantage of going out there and be able to throw everything I got to one guy, you know, keep him off balance.
When you were coming through, you were a high school draft pick. Command was kind of a big deal for you. You know, a lot of walks and a lot of deep counts. Command really hasn't been a big issue for you this year. And again, I think it might be some of the mechanical switches that you made in the offseason. But you're just dominating the strike zone so far.
Yeah, you know, my mindset going out there is just to attack every hitter and, you know, basically just give myself a chance. You know, if I'm going to give up a hit or a home run or walk a guy, I want to give myself the best chance and not really pitch around them and not try to nitpick and, you know, try to be too fine out there. You know, just work over the plate and trust your stuff. Your stuff's good enough to get these guys out, so there's no reason to, you know, expand the zone and counts you don't really need to.
When you went into spring training this year, was there an inkling from anybody in the front office that said, hey, you're going to make this team? Or did you think, hey, man, if I make this team, fantastic, but I'm okay going to AAA?
They told me in spring, you know, nothing's set in stone, but, you know, you still have to fight for it. And, you know, my mindset in spring was just get better one day at a time and improve each day you went out there. So, you know, I knew I had a chance to make the team, but it wasn't, you know, for sure. And if I didn't make the team, I was going to go to a AAA or wherever I went and continue to do what I was trying to do and get better each day I went out there. And, you know, I happened to make the team and kept the same mindset.
Well, it's a good thing, and Michael Blazek is our guest here as we catch up with the crew, and we asked a couple of people on Twitter, and I sent it out to whoever follows me, and the Brewers sent it out as well for questions for you this week, and we got a couple, and a couple from some familiar faces that you actually know from your past. One came from Chucky Fick, an old buddy of yours at the Cardinals organization. He wanted to know if you would sign a commemorative haunted picture of the Pfister Hotel for him.
That would require me having to probably, you know, dabble in the side that I don't really want to dabble in, because we were talking about it the other day with Wagner. I asked him where he's staying, and he said he was at the Pfister, and I said, well, what side of the Pfister are you on? He said, the left side. And I kind of gave him a little bit of a grin. I said, well, I don't really want to go on that side, because that's the haunted side. So luckily I haven't seen anything, but I would be more than happy to sign it for Chucky.
Chucky out in Santa Barbara. You guys were teammates in the Cardinals organization, and this is all speculation. We don't know whether it's haunted or not. That's just the rumor. I love the Pfister. I've stayed there a couple of times. It's a beautiful hotel. Another question, and this was a really good one. A frequent guy who sends questions into the podcast, Jim Goulart, said not many 35th rounders sign at a high school. You know, and not a lot make their way through to the major leagues, you know, being a 35th round pick. Were you prepared for a 6 or 7 year journey to get to the major leagues?
Honestly, when I signed, I didn't really know too much about the whole system, how the minor leagues work. And, you know, I didn't think it was going to take 7 years, but I didn't know that, you know, the 7 years was the process that it was going to take, you know. But looking back at it, I needed it. You know, I needed to grow and mature and get older and understand how this game works, because I didn't go to college. You know, I wanted to play professional baseball. I wanted to play in the major leagues, you know, ultimately. So when I got drafted, it was, I want to sign, I want to play, you know, this part of the game. So, you know, the journey was, it was a long, long journey, but, you know, it was worth it in the end. I learned a lot.
Do you have any regrets not going to college and signing at a high school?
Right now, no. You know, I'm where I want to be. So, you know, I don't really want to look too far back, but, you know, I'm happy with the decision I had.
Well, and yesterday, you're from Las Vegas. Yesterday, you were telling me that it was 102 degrees in Vegas while it was in the 40s here. And your mom said, hey, man, you want to at least split the difference or trade?
Yeah, she texted me yesterday. She said, I'd be more than happy to switch the temperatures that you guys have for us. And she told me it was 102, and I said, no, thanks. You know, I'm sure we'll get a couple of those days here soon. So I'll take the 45 as long as I can.
Just wait until we go to Arizona in the middle of July. We'll be frying eggs on the sidewalk. The last question I got for you comes from Derek in San Diego, and he wanted to know what the scariest bus ride you've ever been a part of.
Well, you know the trip I'm talking about. We were in Double A, and I think it was 2013 or 12. 2012, we were in Double A. We were driving. Can't remember where we were going, but it was the middle of the night. It had to have been like 1 or 2 in the morning. You know, it was pouring rain outside, and, you know, our bus driver was driving. We couldn't see 10 feet in front of us, and he's just, you know, hauling it down the road. And our manager, you know, was very big on horror movies. So,
yeah, no comedies. No comedies whatsoever.
No comedies at all. So we had Insidious going on, and everyone's asleep. It's, or there's a couple guys awake. You know, I'm sleeping. And it's like 1:30 in the morning, and all of a sudden, our bus driver swerves like almost off the road, and I think he saved it from swerving off the road. And there was a car that was sideways in the middle of the road. You couldn't see it until about 10 feet in front of you. And everyone woke up, and then the movie started getting even worse. And it was just like kind of ironic, you know, and it was just, all right, let's turn this movie off. It was getting kind of sketchy, you know. We all freaked out, turned it off, and nobody else slept the rest of the trip, that's for sure. So.
No, it was dicey. It was from Little Rock to Tulsa. I do remember that trip very vividly because I was awake. I saw the car. We missed it by about a foot. We were in the right lane, swerved through the left lane, into the median, into the grass, and then back up. That was terrifying. That was the scariest bus ride I've ever been on, too.
Yeah, I hope to never really have to go through that again. So.
Yeah, and horror movies on bus rides, too. That's just no fun. I did it for 2 years. No, there's nothing good.
No, you picked a good one, a couple good ones, because I'm pretty sure you were in charge of that, right?
I was.
Yeah, you had to pick all the movies. So, I mean, I'm good on those. Yeah. I don't want to watch them, so thanks.
No, we've got some DirecTV that's on charter now, so I think we're gonna be in good shape.
Yeah, I'll stick to the TV.
Mike, thanks so much for taking a couple of minutes with us here on Brewers on Tap, and continued success. It's so fun to see, you know, we've known each other for a long time. So it's great to see you successful here at the big league level. Keep doing it, all right?
I appreciate it.
Blazek has been simply sensational, 4-1 with a 1.27 earned run average. He's thrown in 21 games so far, struck out 26 batters in 28 and a third innings, and opponents hitting just 158 against Michael Blazek. It was awfully hectic here at Miller Park over the last week. We had the Ceiling Experience open up on Thursday. We had the post-game concert with Joe Nichols playing on Friday. So the grounds crew has been working double time. In this week's edition of Let's Break It Down, I chatted with the head groundskeeper here at Miller Park, Michael Betcher.
Let's Break It Down.
It's time to break it down here on Brewers on Tap, and this week we're literally going to break it down with our head of grounds, that is Michael Boettcher. It has been a whirlwind of a week for you, to say the absolute least. Just kind of take me through where you're at physically after the demanding schedule that you've had over the last 4 days.
Yeah, been an interesting homestand. We've had a couple extra events surrounding the games here this week. You know, we're here on Sunday after it all. One more game to wrap up here with the Brewers on this homestand. Myself, my staff, my managers, my crew have all put in a lot of long hours this week. The events that we had this week, a gala for the Seed League experience on Thursday night and a post-game concert after the game on Friday, both of which impact the field a little bit. And our job was to make sure that regardless of what the impact was on the field, was to make sure it wasn't going to affect any play. So my guys and I spent a lot of long hours here this week making sure that the field was kept in the shape it was needed for this team.
What's unbelievable is you would never be able to tell that there was only a stage at center at second base, but also with the gala, we had the whole stage everywhere that people were sitting. The whole setup was in center field, and you'd not even see a seam of that stage that was there. It was phenomenally done, and I know your guys worked so hard to get yourselves ready to go for the gala, and it was phenomenal.
Yeah, the event turned out great. Those in attendance that evening said it was a great, great activity, a great representation of what this organization is about, you know, recognizing those that did a lot for this organization. And my guys, even Mr. Euchre gave us a shout out here the other night on the radio. And it's really nice to have people take recognition of the jobs that my guys do very good on and work really hard to make sure that the baseball field is never impacted in terms for play.
Well, it's a phenomenal playing service, and Michael, you're a born and raised Wisconsin guy. You're a Brewers fan. I mean, this is a dream job for you to be able to come out, and if you couldn't be playing on the field, you know, taking care of it. How did you get into, you know, wanting to be a head groundskeeper, and how prideful do you take your job?
You know, I am. I'm a small town farm kid. Grew up loving the land, working outside, being a part of agriculture. And this was something that got brought to my attention through college. And ended up doing an internship back in 2004 that opened my eyes to a world I never knew existed. It combines a couple of my passions, agriculture and sports. And after my internship here in 2004, I took a more route with the turf grass management, going with the Boston Red Sox in 2006, and then ending up back here in 2009 as Gary's second assistant. So it really was something I kind of not necessarily fell into, but it was something that I kind of got directed to with my passion of agriculture. And then sports just kind of topped it off, putting those two together. So every day is one of those days that I feel like when I come into work, I get to go to work here today, and I get to do what I do, which is take care of a field, work with Mother Nature, work in agriculture, and you know, really have something that I look forward to every single day.
And it's a very scientific process. A lot of people think that it's, all right, man, you just get on your mower and you cut the grass and all that stuff. It does have to, you know, depending on where you are, and fans that are Cub fans will say that the grass there at Wrigley Field is a little bit longer because their pitching staff likes a lot of ground balls and they like it to stick like Velcro. But you guys have a system here, and, you know, all the events that we have, we've had soccer games here in the past where you have to chop up the pitcher's mound, which is not an easy thing to do. It's a lot of clay, but you guys build it up, and you know, the next day it's ready to go. You know, talk a little bit about the science of maintaining the field a bit.
So much science. I spend a lot of my time talking with turf grass researchers and a lot of research out there in general in improving our sports fields every year, from where the game of baseball was, you know, 20 years ago to what it is now in terms of their fields. It's a huge improvement. Us as sports turf managers strive every day to improve our surfaces and make sure that our surfaces are 100% ready. And we always have a little friendly competition amongst us to always produce the best surface. Here in Milwaukee, we have our challenges. We have spring, which we still are feeling pretty good today here on May 31st, of highs in the 50s. But, you know, we always have our challenges of retractable rough structure and just a lot of events on the field. But, you know, we really do work every day with our research and our turf plants and making sure that we're giving them the best growing conditions possible and finding out what's best out there. Our clay surfaces, we replaced our infield clay here a few years back to improve that surface. The mound, we always are looking at the different types of clays that work best for our facility here and us for us to manage every day. Above and beyond everything, you know, we all work together as managers. We all help each other out, come up with ideas, and brainstorm on what we can do different to improve our field for our players, for our organization, and have one of the best surfaces that we can produce here in Milwaukee.
When it comes to the mound, I find it fascinating because it has to have a specific slope. It has to have a specific height. How do you do that? I mean, is it just bringing out the tools? Okay, it's measured at the right angle. I mean, do you stick a ruler in the middle of the mound and say, okay, here we are, this is where we need to build around? How do you do it?
There's a lot of lasers involved, if you could say that. We do a lot of shooting elevations with the laser level, a transit, and it's very exact. We work in terms of 30 seconds to 16ths of an inch all the time out here, whether it goes from grass cutting to mound placement, elevation, bases, you know, their distance is 90 feet, home to second, 127 feet, 3 3/8 inches. You know, there's everything's down to the inch, mm-hmm. Fraction of an inch for that matter.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me chatting with Michael Betcher, who is the head groundskeeper here at Miller Park. You mentioned the roof, and it must be a blessing for you because sometimes we have some bad weather here in Wisconsin. We will never have a rain delay because we have the roof, which is a great thing for you and your crew. But there are some caveats with that when it's a beautiful day outside and some people are complaining that maybe the roof isn't open because it's beautiful outside. You know, there are the roof rules. Can you explain the roof rules for me?
You know, roof rules, there definitely always is some out there. You know, we definitely want to, there's a lot of factors that go into the roof positioning. First of all and foremost, the weather. You know, if it's rainy outside, we're closed. We want to play baseball here. You know, then we look into, you know, winds and how windy it is out here and then how cold it is. You know, when's a good temperature to open up for the fans, the players, everybody. You know, but there is a lot that goes into it. It's not just, oh, let's close today or let's stay open. Mother Nature is our driver pretty much in that regard. And here in the month of April this spring, we were closed for 16 days again. So always a challenge for us as groundskeepers. But, you know, we played baseball every day. We had fans enjoying the atmosphere here, warm. They can come in and enjoy and relax every time they're here in Miller Park.
And the roof opening like halfway some days because of the shadows, I'm assuming.
Yeah, primarily. There's always those shadows that we deal with here at the park. And, you know, you try to make sure that, you know, both teams have a great opportunity to play the game that's supposed to be played. And a shadow, you know, may have an impact in some regard. So definitely try to take out anything that we can with the use of the roof that way.
That was one of the subjects that was heavily debated on Twitter when we said that you were going to be joining us here on the show. And another one, a friend of mine wanted to know for his grass at home. He's got a couple of little uneven spots. He's got some tufts that come up every now and again. How do you get away from that on the old home lawn?
You know, the home lawn, it's the old saying, you got to put the time and money in. You know, it takes time. We're out here, you know, every day, it seems like from early in the morning to late at night, taking care of it. Take a little bit of time and interest and above all, you know, and most importantly, a little bit of money into your lawn. You know, you got to fertilize, you got to mow, you got to just take care of it. It's a living, breathing entity just like us. It needs to be fed. And if you do that for your grass, it'll give you the rewards back.
All right. Again, that was for my friend, not for me personally. So that's a good thing. One final question for you. If you couldn't be, you know, taking care of the ballpark here at Miller Park, is there another stadium, another sporting venue that you would love to take care of?
You know, working in sports in general is incredible. We've got two amazing parks in this state, Lambeau Field, Miller Park. I love that. I get to work at one of them here in the great state of Wisconsin, born and raised. And, you know, if there's ever something that comes up someday, that opportunities, you know, always explore. But, you know, I really do love what I get to do right here in my home state of Wisconsin.
The field is spectacular. You guys do a great job, and congratulations again on all the success and maybe a couple of more wins here for us. But no matter what, the field is always going to look beautiful. Thanks so much.
Yes, thank you. Shout out to my team, everybody that I work with every single day. They work really hard to help me do what I do, and I can't thank my team enough.
Our special thanks to head groundskeeper Michael Betcher. He and his crew do such a phenomenal job here, and you'd never know they had such a hectic week.
Checking in on the farm.
As we check in on the farm system for the Brewers, also check out our blog, Minor Details, at minordetails.mlblogs.com for your fix on the Brewers minor league system. The Brewers have seen a host of players make their major league debuts over the last week. David Goforth was the first back on the 26th of May, getting a couple of outs and a scoreless appearance. He has yet to give up a run in his time with Milwaukee, and he talked about his call-up with the media prior to his debut.
It's really awesome. You know, it's, like I said, it's something I've dreamed about since I was a little kid, and you know, for it to finally, you know, come true and be able to live that, it's really awesome.
Have any idea how you'll be coming out of the bullpen for the first time? Have you thought about that over the years?
I've thought about it, but I'm sure it will be probably a lot different and a lot more adrenaline than I could ever dream of. So I guess I'll just have to play that by ear and see what happens whenever that time comes.
After family Corey, able to make the trip? Or?
I've got my dad, stepmom, and then my best friend from high school is going to be here today. They come from Mississippi. They drove up. They started driving last night. So they're actually already here in Milwaukee. They got here before I did.
A couple of right-handers coming up. Is this the moment for David Goforth? It is. Craig Counsell is on his way out. They're all anxious in Mississippi. Big moment here for David Goforth. He'll be making his Major League debut. Well, you wonder what's going through his mind. First two batters he faces in the big leagues, Pence and Posey. Good luck. In the air to left. Back is Davis at the track, and he's got it for the out. And Goforth survives his Major League debut. There's three outs, partner. You can head on to the dugout, man. It's over. You're a big league pitcher.
The second player to make his Major League debut last week was right-hander Tyler Wagner, and he had a very unique way of finding out he was coming to Milwaukee. Let's hear about that reaction from Tyler himself, as well as the scouting report from pitching coach Rick Kranitz.
All right, just tell me about that moment in the clubhouse when, you know, Carlos made the announcement.
I mean, it was pretty unbelievable. You know, the anticipation of him talking about, you know, somebody getting called up, and then he finally said it was going to be a starter. You know, my heart just, I don't know if it was beating fast or if it stopped beating, but it was just one of those breathtaking moments that you live for.
What does it mean going straight from AA to the big leagues?
I mean, it's something crazy, a crazy feeling for me, knowing that, you know, the organization has a lot of faith in me and trust, you know, all the hard work that I've been putting in. But, you know, it's just awesome to have an opportunity.
Now, getting off this road trip, how has it made you a better person? And now getting off this road trip and going and, you know, pitching the big leagues?
I think, you know, being around guys for that long a time in such a short area is, you know, just not only good for baseball-wise, but just to develop as a person. You'll learn, you know, communication skills and stuff that you can't really, you know, teach unless you experience something like that. So, you know, we as a team have grown so much, and it's I would rather, you know, I wouldn't do it with any other group of guys. The relationships that I've developed on this team are unbelievable, and the guys that I've played with are great, and you know, I couldn't ask for anything better.
Well, I know he's a very good athlete. I saw him one inning in the fall league. He's got a very good sinker, changeup, slider, pitcher, and from what I heard of him and what I saw of him just in a brief period of time, he throws a lot of strikes, he's very competitive and a good athlete.
What is the challenge for a pitcher jumping from AA all the way to the big leagues?
Usually, well, what it is that they don't try to do too much. You know, he still has to be the guy that he is. He still has to throw his sinker. He still has to, make his pitches and throw the ball down the strike zone, pitch ahead. I mean, that's the biggest thing is with guys that come up and they think they have to do more, they really don't. They just have to let their stuff work, and by that, getting into a nice rhythm and just letting his pitches work for him. Basically, just say, stick to your strengths. This is what we're going to do. We're not going to ask you to do things that you're not capable of doing. And, make it as simple as possible. Because all it is he needs to just worry about execution, executing one pitch at a time, and that's it. Read the swing and then go to the next hitter or the next pitch.
Well, Tyler's debut did not go the way that he wanted to. 5 runs allowed in 3 2/3 innings, and then optioned immediately down to Biloxi right after the ball game on Sunday. But the Brewers did win that 17-inning thriller, a game started by Tyler Wagner. His folks were also in town from Las Vegas, and a good number of family members from Minnesota made the trip to Milwaukee to see Wagner's debut. And finally, Tyler Cravey made his debut against the Cardinals on Tuesday night in St. Louis. And the right-hander couldn't have been better, throwing 7 scoreless innings, allowing just 1 run on 4 hits while striking out 6. That's it on the debut front. More on the minor league news side. The Biloxi Shuckers, they finally got a home. MGM Park is on schedule to host the Shuckers and the Mobile Bay Bears on June the 6th, coming up next weekend. And the 55-game road trip will finally come to a close.
Here's what's on tap with the Brewers.
The Brewers are on the road, as we mentioned, through the next podcast at least. Trip to Minnesota to see our old friend Paul Molitor and the surging Minnesota Twins, and then a trip to Pittsburgh to play the Pirates Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week. The crew will come home from Pittsburgh to see the Washington Nationals for 4 games, and then the Kansas City Royals for a couple, the 11th through the 16th. We'll have more details on what's to come on the next podcast, but make sure you plan ahead as the Brewers will have plenty going on the weekend of the 12th through the 14th. It starts with our first T-shirt Friday. That's on the 12th against the Nationals. And then on the 13th, our second post-game concert featuring the band OAR. And then on Sunday, another bobblehead. It's the 2014 National League All-Star Carlos Gomez bobblehead giveaway. That's the 14th of June against the Washington Nationals. Make sure you plan ahead. Visit Brewers.com to get your tickets. That's going to do it this week for Brewers on Tap. Again, don't forget to tweet your questions to @Brewers on Twitter using the hashtag Brewers on Tap. Thanks to our great guest, right-handed reliever Michael Blazek, and the Brewers head groundskeeper, Michael Betcher. My name is Jeff Levering. Thanks for listening to the official podcast of the Milwaukee Brewers. This is Brewers on Tap.